onerous contracts.
I will leave because it is not onerous contract in insurance.
Okay.
Good morning. So yeah, onerous contract. In December 2018, the board published an exposure draft called Onerous Contracts, Cost of Fulfilling a Contract. And the exposure draft proposes to specify in IS 37 that an entity includes the costs that relate directly to the contract in assessing whether the contract is onerous. This means that an entity would include the incremental costs of fulfilling the contract and an allocation of costs that relate directly to contract activities. Agenda paper 3A provides an overview of the amendments proposed in the exposure draft. So you will be discussing the board's provisions project right after this discussion. So I also wanted to just touch on why this project's different from the provisions one, or being done separately anyway. The main reason is that IS 11 has recently been withdrawn, and so entities previously applying that to their construction contracts have to apply IS 37 instead. And IS 11 contains very specific requirements on what costs an entity does and does not include, which are not in IS 37. So the Interpretations Committee had received a request to clarify whether those companies that used to apply IS 11 could still consider the same costs. And so because of this recent withdrawal, the request was considered more urgent than the other parts of the provisions project. And the board also considered the matter to be kind of a separate and self-contained project, and therefore the board decided to publish this exposure draft separate from the rest of the provisions project. And so the purpose of this session is to obtain your views on the impact of the proposed amendments and whether you agree with the proposed amendments. So I'll now hand over for you to discuss.
Any comments?
I refer to paragraph 68B, which says that general and administrative costs do not relate directly to a contract unless they're explicitly chargeable to the counterparty under the contract. I can understand this if it is cost plus contracts. For other contracts which you cannot identify whether it is chargeable or not chargeable, I would say that this paragraph would create some confusion. What should be the direction a preparer has to take?
It seems to be a very good comment. Do you have a kind of some recommendation for other?
I don't have any specific example, but by reading this, I would assume that you are referring to a cost plus contract.
Okay.
But not everything you come across is a cost plus contract. So you need to have some flexibility in the definition here.
Can I maybe just ask in response to it, if it's helpful, that where the wording in 68B sort of originates from is that we very much started and we looked at what is described as costs that relate directly to a contract that's in IFRS 15, because we thought it made sense that, you know, we looked at those to see which of those that we thought would be relevant in the context of assessing whether a contract is onerous. So I suppose that's just the explanation of how it got there. I think what will be useful in feedback is to understand if people have any difficulty applying those words in IFRS 15. Because, as I say, the intention was simply to ensure consistency there, because we thought in this respect it meant, you know, they should be considered in a consistent way.
Okay.
Arindra?
The first point is the concept is well understood. There was a need to clarify that it is not incremental cost, but the total cost. So I'm welcoming this. The only point I have is that 68A is an inclusive sentence. It starts with there is a word includes. So therefore, the items mentioned there, it's an inclusive clause, so I can understand it's only an example given in the paragraph. When it comes to 68B, it only talks about administrative costs unrelated to a specific contract. Now, this is not an inclusive definition. So the word inclusive should be used. For example, I'm giving you an example. What happens to the selling cost? I have a large sales team, the cost of which cannot be assigned to related to a direct contract. So therefore, my suggestion is the 68B also should be made an inclusive clause rather than a direct clause. Alternatively, in the illustrated example or BC, it should be amply clarified that what you mean actually is this.
Okay. Murillo?
Yes. I have some concerns about the proposals in the exposure draft related to the costs for an entity that does not apply these account, does not have an accounting policy that complies with the proposals in the exposure draft. So there would probably be a huge increase for compliance in internal controls. I think it is not impossible to have some counterintuitive results if the proposal is adopted. I imagine a situation in which you have an asset that has some idle capacity and it's part of a cash generating unit, so you do not recognize on a loss for that idle capacity. But once the entity sells part of that idle capacity to provide service to someone, if that service is sold for a very low price, it might result in an onerous contract using this definition here, even though from the perspective of the entity, it was a very good deal because it's idle capacity. He could sell it for 1 cent, $1, anything. But the administration would be demonstrating something bad to the company, even though it was a good business. So it's kind of weird to me.
And what is the proposal? Because it was a question to the interpretation committee, and they asked for clarification. And I think that is our response. Do you want to leave it open? Say, okay, it is too costly, and therefore we should allow diversity, or?
I don't know. I honestly didn't analyze the diversity analysis. I didn't read the analysis concerning diversity, but from my perspective, I think that either leave diversity or focus on incremental costs.
Incremental, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, just to explain that diversity piece, Marilla, and I'm interested in anybody else's thoughts, is the reason that it was, I think, both the committee and then the board thought this was a real problem that we should solve is because actually people were starting from different places. So it's almost like it was a real life practical problem for companies that we understood existed, because those who had revenue contracts that fell into IAS 11 had specific requirements in IAS 11, which essentially shouldn't be that different from our proposals in terms of the cost that they include in thinking about whether the contract is onerous. So all of those construction contracts that flow through IAS 11 were starting in one place. Other people who just flowed revenue contracts and others through the IAS 37 requirements potentially had those two ways of looking at those words in 37, but may have applied an incremental cost approach. And actually now, because all of those contracts now had to flow through IAS 37, there were real concerns that came to us, actually particularly from the sort of construction sector, to say, well, what do we do here? And are you actually telling us in the context of what were IAS 11 contracts that we have to do something different, and something different that potentially means we're not going to be reporting sort of expected losses on contracts as early as we have been? And even some people said, well, actually, I have some contracts that previously were in IAS 11 and some that were previously in IAS 18. And I now don't know what to do. I could even possibly think I have diversity internally. So I suppose it's only to say that I think this this at least what came to us, whether it was a real practical question for companies, which is why the board tried to act, you know, more quickly and doing something that, that was trying to be helpful and at least clarifying. There's one way you think about this for all of your revenue contracts and any other contracts. That
then I would support the view of working with incremental clauses. It's such a big issue for construction companies and others.
Okay. Christoph? I agree with the proposal because I think it would be very difficult to have the definition what are cost of fulfilling under IFRS 15 and what are cost of fulfilling for the purpose of onerous contract not aligned. In particular, because IAS 37 tells you first you write off whatever you have on your balance sheet before you go here, and then if the definitions are not aligned, it will be really difficult. I wonder, though, why the wording was repeated here rather than referring to IFRS 15, but to then not repeat everything, which creates the impression that it is not intended to have it fully aligned. Give you one example, IFRS 15 clarifies cost of waste should be excluded. That's not in here, which could create the discussion on whether that should be treated differently. So rather than having wording identical in two places but not fully identical, why wasn't it considered to simply say that the cost definition for the purpose of IAS 17 is the same as under IFRS 15 and simply solve it by a cross-reference, and with that eliminating any doubt that the intention is to have these definitions aligned. One more comment, this is only one of several issues with onerous contracts. The unit of the account is the second one, yeah? And the horizon, do I look at the residual contract or the full contract, is the third one. And there are companies, including my company, we changed our onerous contract policies in the light of IFRS 15. Because now contract, before that I had a contract definition IAS 11, yeah, which is different from today's and stuff. So we already went through a change there. But it was really difficult because IAS 37 is so unclear. Yeah. So you're here solving only one of at least three issues around onerous contracts.
Chuck?
Thank you. Yeah, actually, the scope is very important issue. Reason why we have this clarification is because we need to address the issue of IAS 11. But because we are going to change the IAS 37, it may cover the contract which was not within the IAS 11, which was mentioned by Paterina. Maybe my concern when we are discussing this proposal was long-term service contract. So it may include long-term service contract, which was not included in the IAS 11 definition. So therefore, those who might have an accounting policy to include only incremental costs for the long-term service contract, then they need to change their accounting policy so that they have to include some part of the direct cost which is not incremental. That may cause some significant impact. That is what I was thinking. So therefore, we would like to know what kind of impact you can imagine other than the what you already had in the IAS 11. So that's what we would like to know.
Thanks, Jack.
And I think your clarification was helpful on why this was arising. A couple of observations. So the first one is that for manufacturing companies, there would have been a lot more attention on the IFRS 15 proposals related to this area if we weren't given assurance that onerous contracts would not change, onerous contract accounting would not change, that it would still apply under IAS 37. So I understand Christoph's point about consistency, but that was an area that assurance was given, and therefore in the context of IFRS 15, those questions were taken off the table. So maybe we are in a situation where those who were applying IAS 11 previously, which is a very small subset of all contracts, maybe the size of those contracts and the nature of those contracts does demand something slightly different. Those who are applying IAS 18 previously and using IAS 37 for onerous contract accounting, you do get areas where the lines can become blurred. So if you've got a plant with, you know, that manages three contracts, are they more towards an IAS 11 situation or not? You know, where do you draw those lines on the allocation of overheads? So I'd encourage some thought, and I think that some people might be concerned that IAS 37 proposals that they thought they'd been given reassurance wouldn't be revisited are now being revisited.
Can I ask, do you anticipate, or to anybody, do you anticipate, you know, based on the example you gave, questions or issues around the practicalities of doing allocation, because I think you touched on that, and maybe in responding to that, if you could think about it, because I think part of the thought process here is cost allocation is something you have to do all the time. You have to do all the time in the context of costing your inventories, in terms of even when you buy PP&E. So I think part of the thought process here, now implying revenue standard itself, but I'm interested in knowing whether you think some of the allocations would be particularly difficult in this context and that you don't face when you're doing cost allocations and other standards.
So it depends on how rigid we end up being on the cost allocation methodology as to what the impact would be. And I recognise that there are different practices, so I understand the rationale for visiting this. I think the concern will arise that where you have contracts which weren't onerous previously and now suddenly are onerous, and whether that makes sense on a contract-by-contract basis. Current requirements have been understood, been applied for some time. Understand there was something different for IAS 11 contracts, and absolutely understand the rationale for that. But to bring that rationale into all of the other contracts will create different answers. And while you may be able to calculate those answers, how you then communicate that to the user, you know, it wasn't onerous before, now it's suddenly onerous because the methodology has changed. That may be difficult.
What would you suggest then?
I'd suggest that you carve out those contracts. So the definition of IAS 11 could be applied to a different subset of accounting.
So you'd suggest creating that within IFRS 15, creating it within IAS
15? Whether you did it in 37 or 15 would be...
So recreating all of the difficult questions that existed before about maybe whether you put a revenue contract through IAS 18 and IAS 11?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What would be the argument for treating non-construction contracts differently from construction contracts? So if you had another sort of long-term contract, but it wasn't construction, it was either service or manufacturing, what would be the argument for treating that differently?
So the argument, I guess, would be the same as the argument that has previously existed when we had 11 and 18. I guess the impact would be around those situations where you've got contracts which are not so large as to demand cost allocations, which would be more inclusive. And therefore, the logical reason is a big construction contract, you know, you've got a whole bunch of factories on one contract. You know, that's fairly clear cut that the cost of that factory is all devoted to it. And maybe you've also got elements of the sales side and so on, which are also fully devoted. But where does that line come where actually you've just got a general overhead? And how far do you go in allocating that? I said to Anna, in terms of the calculation, but it just depends on where those definitions end. you know, if you start reaching into GNA, which ordinarily wouldn't be included in inventory under point-in-time accounting, then you do start to create tension and areas where actually the systems that we have don't facilitate those calculations. Yeah. I mean, but for big construction contracts, you've got very clear lines.
Yeah.
And you know, the budgeting and the allocation of those costs is very straightforward.
So what sort of contracts are you thinking that it wouldn't be suitable for? Have you got some examples? So are they manufacturing contracts?
Yes, so manufacturing contracts.
Long-term manufacturing contracts?
So it's more challenging when you've got longer term. So where you've got contracts which are of a reasonable size and a reasonable duration.
Okay, Ian?
So we take a very narrow approach, and this is very much on the incremental cost, but the main area where this comes up in our sector is actually with the use of contract research organisations. So you will actually have external companies that recruit patients for medical trials, and these take years to do, and at various points there are data readouts, and if the data readouts are negative, then it's clear that the drug that's being researched actually won't end up with a commercial product. But you can't just stop the trial immediately and just wave all the patients goodbye. You've got to carry on doing it and wrap it all up, so you're then at that point stuck with in an onerous contract scenario. And we very narrowly say it's only the external costs, but we do. My concern here is, you know, we would then have to track how many of, I don't know, internal research people, IT people, whatever, is still working on this particular project, which could be sort of 6 months, a year or whatever. We would then have to capture that and somehow provide for it, which will be a certain amount of work. And to be brutally honest, we'd have to establish a governance process, because then, you know, we'd have to, the concern would be actually that we lose control of our budgeting and control of what's going on. So at the moment, we have a very narrow definition, which maybe is rather sector-specific, but I think hearing this, there's different types of contracts that could be caught for this, and I'd caution that we go for a sort of a one-size-fits-all solution here. I can see the arguments on the other side, but I'm a bit concerned it would actually, we'd sort of lose control of what's going on internally. You'd have all sorts of internal costs being somehow stuck in some provision somewhere and not running through the normal sort of management processes that we can see what's going on.
I'm sorry, thank you for that. That's noted in terms of cost. I think the other thing would be helpful if people are commenting is thinking about, you know, the board, this question coming that said, look, there's two quite different ways that you can read these words. It's going to create real, you know, differences and outcomes, and therefore in thinking about the way to go in this, I think obviously, the article in the document explains why, from the board's perspective, not only do they think their proposal would get us, you know, address the consistency argument, but also actually provide much better information to investors, be a faithful representation. And I suppose just it would be really helpful from your perspective if the board were to go a different route, as you're suggesting, a narrower route, how would they present that, either in the context of suggesting that for different types of contract investors might need different information, or maybe even in the light of some of the more recent press headlines where some companies, it's come out of longer term contracts that people have had, that they've proven to be more onerous, and it's been a bit of a surprise to the market that those contracts have become more onerous. And I'm thinking about some headlines in the UK, particularly over a company in that respect. How would the board sell that proposal to say we're going to move away from actually you including what are all the costs directly related to a contract when you're coming up with your onerous contract assessment? We're going to move away from an earlier warning about when contracts might be onerous to do something different.
Ivaki?
Yes. I want to echo those points that, you know, in general, service contract would be more difficult in terms of cost allocation compared to the construction project. That's my view. Having said that, I have one question or clarification. You know, this is related to the time horizon, looking at the, you know, those cost items. I understand the we should look at the contract. The duration of a contract is one important criteria, but the cost side, especially relevant cost incurring internally, may take a longer duration, such as internal IT service or something like that. I mean, external IT service we utilize for the purpose of particular contract fulfillment. So we have to count all the cost, in a long-run horizon, long-term horizon, right? Regardless of the particular contract, particular onerous contract we are looking at, right? So this could be some discrepancy between the time horizon and length of times. But I just wonder, how should we consider the kind of, duration of contract we should take a look? Maybe hard to answer, but sorry about that. But we have to account any cost happening in the long run. That's right. When estimating this provision amount, that's your point, right?
I think you're making your assessment at a particular date, but obviously looking out at whatever costs you expect to incur in fulfilling that contract.
Okay.
So as long as that contract would run.
As long as possible, right?
Mm-hmm. I think as long as the contract would run, in a sense, as long as you would be performing in fulfilling the contract.
Would that be as determined under IFRS 15? Because IFRS 15 talks about contract durations,
yeah.
And I think if this is what is intended here, then maybe that should be spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is this unit of account thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Same thing with the benefit. If I look at the other side of what I compare to identify whether it's onerous, what about renewals of contracts and stuff? So that's where it is. And that's why, for me, it's difficult to comment on whether this provides more useful information. If you say, well, people can have still so much up to accounting policies, like do they do this on performance obligation level or on full contract level? What do they consider to be benefit they consider in the equation to determine it? So you're solving one piece of the puzzle, and you say, does that make the puzzle better? And you say, well, difficult to say if the other pieces are still up in the air and up to discretion. So that's why it is difficult. One more quick comment is, always consider it's not only contracts that are onerous on day one, mm-hmm. but on a contract that got onerous later. And that's where I think oftentimes, at least from an internal perspective, this view on the allocations may be different. So if we have a fixed price service contract that we initially think we got a good margin on, now we think we've got to throw in 1,000 more man days. Sorry, we're still calling them man days. Though we throw this in, yeah. If from an internal perspective, you actually then think about the incremental cost of these additional man days.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about, all right, so it's an additional 1,000 mandate. That's why this contract needs to have a higher allocation of depreciation of the building these guys are sitting in. That's not how you would think about it internally, whether you think, well, is it now burdensome to have this? Do I feel like I'm having a loss on the contract? Yeah. You would say, well, I got to add something. You then, I think, for internal purposes, think in incremental terms more than in direct terms. That may be different at the outset of the contract, but in later changes, I think that if I try to convince my FP&A colleagues to think of that in this case, now we call it a loss contract, they would say, yeah, you call it from your weird accounting perspective, but we don't do from our steering perspective. So we move it potentially away of steering. But I think that was done when IFRS 15 defined what should be capitalized, yeah. And not now. This is only aligning it with it. But you may want to really think more about where should you do references to IFRS 15, like what is a contract? Yeah? Because if people think that the contract definition is different here than it is under IFRS 15, then the entire aligning of the definition is blown up because it's not aligned at all.
I think you raised some good points, Chris. We certainly will look closer. Just as a quick one, the reason that we didn't just directly do a cross-reference is because, whilst, you know, the reason behind this for doing this is very much linked to revenue contracts, this can apply to contracts that are other than revenue as well, because it's 37. But I think it's good. We can certainly, you know,
I think
look at
like
that
the contract
more
duration, the definition on when do I consider a contract to end. I think that in IFRS 15 is not revenue specific.
Richard?
I'm having a hard time with the 68AC in the context of a manufacturer that produces a product which is for sale to, on a PO basis to some customers and on a contract basis to other customers. The costs that I would be considering would be direct labor, direct materials, production overhead, and delivery costs. Direct labor, direct materials you've covered. For some, you've pulled out depreciation out of production overhead specifically, and then you've, the rest of production overhead, I assume, under 68B is excluded, and you're silent on delivery costs. I just wondered why the trick treatment of depreciation is different from other production overhead.
I mean, just to link back maybe to explain, to link back to Christoph's comments, is if you look at the wording of 68A actually and 68B, it's very much the starting point was to look at the words in IFRS 15. Christoph's point, let's be consistent where we think it makes sense and therefore use the exact words. Where we haven't used the exact words is because we thought about it and thought, is there a reason that it might, you know, be different here? So I suppose the explanation to that is that's something that's mentioned in IFRS 15 as an example of a cost that's directly related. And so because we intended the same thing here, we thought it was important to use the same words. But there's nothing else behind it other than just trying to, you know, say the same thing when we mean the same thing.
So in my, I can't interpret this. Just from this word, it requires more interpretation for me. It's not clear the way it's written. In the...
Okay, Varindra?
There is no element of operating cost which cannot be finally allocated to the unit of operation or to a contract. That's the starting point. But we are not discussing that here. We are talking about only those elements of cost which can be reasonably and practically possible to attribute to a contract. But this is not coming out. I mean, this has to be clarified, if not in the standard, somewhere. Otherwise, what will happen is that at the time of audit, every audit we are going to have, there can be a position that now why don't we apply a stretch definition? Now, what is stretch definition? Again, is a matter of interpretation. So this has to be clarified, that what is reasonably and practically possible to do, that should be good enough.
We have a proposal?
This is my suggestion.
Reasonable and possible, okay.
Yeah.
Stephen?
Can I just ask for clarification on what we are included in C? Because I'm struggling the same as Richard, and it might just help to explore it. So, for example, are we looking to include IT costs? I think he talks about general management, so I assume that you've got some board costs that would be included. You know, where can I just tease out where those lines might be?
And why is that so difficult? Because when you're doing a lot of other things, cost allocations, and do you have this question only for this proposal or not for all that?
Yeah.
How do you do it when you're costing up your inventory? Because it's broadly the same.
Same as that.
So it would focus more on the production overheads. It wouldn't be an allocation of extensive G&A costs.
No. And
of course,
depending on the circumstances, but the aim was to align very much with the way in which you would value your assets applying something like IAS 2 or IFRS 15. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and unless there were specific reasons for some of these higher level costs to be allocated to contract activity,
So that would be helpful. And I suppose the distinction is, so for IFRS 2 and for IFRS 15, mm-hmm. Point in time mm-hmm. management.
Yep.
Sorry. you are looking at historic costs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you're not looking at future costs.
Yeah.
And therefore you're using data which can more easily be generated.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. To take some unusual situations, you could find yourself saying, well, okay, does the even after the year end, we've given a salary increase to all of our board. Does that suddenly, looking forward, create an onerous contract as an adjustment post-balance sheet event? So these are the kind of complications that may arise. And I'm just picking one example.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of information that we might not have built into our systems because they're more looking at inventory.
Yeah. Well, at any point in time, you're having to predict forward the costs of fulfilling the contract, which presumably you had to do when you were pricing the contract in the first place. So it's just continuing whatever yeah. forecast you were making when you priced the contract. And I don't know whether I don't know board member salaries would come into it at all. Mm-hmm. But
that's why it's important to understand where the line is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just what I'm struggling with myself at the moment. So,
and at least if it's and if it's helpful, the reason I know you have questions around the words, very intentionally the board tried to use words that already exist in other standards to not create new questions. Mm-hmm. So that when you're applying either IFRS 15 costs, when you're applying IS2, whatever thought process you're putting into that, we didn't intend this to create some, you know, very new and different thought process. So I don't know if that's, you know, say reassuring. I understand the historical versus forward, but it's very much as Joan said, this wasn't to create something that doesn't mirror and reflect essentially what you're doing in your business, either first of all in pricing your contracts or then and, you know, costing out your inventory, etc.
Okay.
Well, I think you have.
Could you explain?
The way I read this is it does create a new basis. This is not the same method that we would use to value inventory. It completely ignores the production overhead.
So at the minute, so what will be in production? Because first of all, 68A are just examples. So we're not saying it's an exhaustive list, but I'm just wondering, what do you think is there anything in there that you think you wouldn't be production overhead and what
but
do you think is missing?
It's not an example. So 68 says cost of fulfilling a contract comprises the costs that relate directly to the contract.
Yep.
So my read that is production overhead does not relate directly to the contract. Production overhead is not direct, and it relates to the product. Product may be sold on contract or may be sold on purchase order. So production overhead clearly doesn't fit in 68. And other than depreciation, it's not an example of items that are included in 68A. So I would be taking direct labor, direct material, and from this just the depreciation component of production overhead. I would be excluding the rest of production overhead, and I would be excluding delivery costs.
Is it the words relate directly? If it said directly attributable to the contract, would you think your production overheads were then included?
But in the interest of time, can you maybe do that offline?
Yeah, no, that would be very helpful to understand.
Just final words. I think this proposal is quite challenging. The discussion we had internally was there might be a two way, because the issue was just the issue of IS-11, which pointed out by Stephen. So we could just simply grandfather IS-11 so that in order to carry on what the current practice for the IS-11 type of contract. But because we have abolished IS-11 and merged into the IFRS 15, it would be very challenging to segregate IS-11 type contract from the IFRS 15. So therefore, eventually what we are doing is we knew that there was a diversification in practice other than IFRS IS-11 type contract. So then eventually we are challenging for the diversification in practice and make it a kind of simple way, which is written in 60A and 6A and B. So we are asking you have to follow the specified way written here. So it's a challenging area. So that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, thanks, Tech. Richard, is it still up for? Okay. So a lot of input, you guys. I think that we'll finalize the discussion on this point, and then we stay with provisions. Sure.
Right.